we've literally gone from 0 to 100 in about 3 minutes.
Nearly Beloved, we're gathered here tonight to put on our enormous shoulder pads, white leggings, and roll around in the mud while bitterly fighting over a basic man's affections. That's right, we're here to talk about The Bachelor Australia 2020. I'm Lucy May, I'm your host for these proceedings, and my terrific, terrified of heights co-host is Karen Pickering.
Sorry, I was just adjusting the G-string under my white knickerbockers.
Knickerbockers. Okay, yes, I'll forgive you. That snapping sound. Yes, lovely. I won't cut that out of the mix. We recorded this on Wurundjeri and Wadawurrung land, and let's slide on into it like Charlie did into Roxy.
How about no?
Karen, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh. I'm not going to make this easy on her. It's going to be hard.
And the question is, would you rather be forced to scale a cliff or face Roxy in a fight to the death / gridiron match?
It's actually really hard.
Yeah. Both have far-reaching consequences.
They both seem like the thing I would least like to do.
Yeah.
Equally.
Hence the question. Yeah. Got to make it hard for you.
I think I would probably scale the cliff.
Really?
If only to get away from everyone on the show.
Yeah. Just keep climbing.
Including The Bachelor.
Yes. I think we've both turned a corner on him, haven't we? But we can get to that. Yeah, agreed. That's a sensible choice. I feel like once you've scaled the cliff and presumably escaped with your life, that's the end of that. Whereas Roxy, you know, in 50 or 60 years is, or even longer, 70 years perhaps, is going to be rising from the grave like, oh, Charlie.
Roxy would
take you down.
Roxy would slice you to ribbons.
Yeah.
The first time she faced you. So it would actually be over quickly, but with a maximum amount of pain and suffering for both parties because she's not having a good time. So if only she would take a little bit more, you know, glee in her kneecapping of others.
Because, I mean, as much as Ariba did also probably turn a corner a little bit this run of episodes in enjoying other people's suffering, at least she is having fun.
Oh, she's having a great time.
Just really suffering the whole time. Anyway, thank you for your answers. I appreciate them and they are correct, so that's good. Your opinion is correct.
Phew.
The other opinion that I assume is going to be correct of yours is that we now don't like the Batchy anymore.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
He's
for real.
Fake, I reckon, right? He's a phony.
I've really turned on him. Yeah, he's a fake and a phony, and I wish I'd never laid eyes on him.
Okay. So because mine was a little bit gradual and then I fell off a cliff. So for me, it was the first couple of dates in this run of episodes, I was still thinking, oh, okay. So he seems interested in everyone and is giving everyone a good go, giving everyone a chance.
Giving everyone a turn on the, on the wild ride that is the Lockie Express.
On the bucking bronco. But then at maybe the third or fourth round of that, I was thinking, it's not so much that he's open to everyone, it's that he's offering everyone exactly the same experience.
Yeah. And he's like, he's robotically faking enthusiasm for the same amount for everyone.
Do you think that's fake? Because I kind of feel like he's equally interested in everyone. Like, and that's kind of.
So you think that he is like, he's Jaime from Get Smart.
Yes. It's exactly the same level.
See, I think he's more like diabolical now.
You think he's duplicitous about it? You don't think he's actually attracted to them? Or do you think he only wants to bonk them and he doesn't want to actually marry them?
No, I think he wants to host the reboot of Burke's Backyard. Lockie's Backyard. What's his last name?
Gilbert.
Gilbo's Backyard.
I will not have that name sullied because it's the last name of several of my friends. Unrelated friends.
Well, that's actually, why I changed it to Gilbo's.
Like, yeah,
Gilbo's. Surely that is different enough.
Yeah. I mean, when he's offering multiple women the chance to partially fulfill their career half the year in Bali, and he's offering that equally to everyone. You could be unfulfilled in your career in Bali for half the year just as much as anyone else can.
I just feel like because it's progressed to the next week, then
yeah,
the relationships are expected to progress in terms of the conversational intimacy or trust or whatever. So then at this next level he's operating at, it's really transparent and obvious that he's a fake. Whereas in the first one, it's like you're at a party and you meet someone, you think, oh yeah, they're so nice, they're charming, charismatic, yeah, or whatever. And then, you know, you realize that, yeah, all they do is talk about themselves and whatever, you know, like you kind of have you understand that he, like, now I look at him and I'm like, everything you say sounds unbelievable. Like, it sounds, yeah, like a line, you know. Oh yeah, I'm just smitten with her. Oh, these girls, this and that. It's like, yeah, nobody talks like that.
Yeah. I feel like someone who's happy to hook up with any of these very attractive, nice women, but not maybe no one not more than the other would say things like this. He just seems to have the same approach and same level of zip towards, or like fizz towards all of them. There doesn't seem to be one, or it's like every time you think, oh, okay, maybe this is who he's vibing with more. And then the next one is like, oh, wait, I mean, maybe it's this one because it's the same. I mean, Bella started off all like la, 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 and now she's,
like 3 dates ago. Yeah.
As far as we know, she's stuck in a cupboard somewhere.
Looking really stressed out.
Yeah. With just a single tiny furrow on her perfect brow.
She's just so pretty. One's just sneaking through there.
Yeah, and it's cute.
It's fucking adorable. Yeah. She also, I feel like you and I are saying the same thing in different, yeah, ways, which is that he's full of shit.
Yeah.
This is what I've decided. That is not necessarily a deterrent to me to watching the show.
Oh, no, not at all. Oh, no, not at all.
But I've just decided that he's just a charlatan, and that's fine. Yeah. He's not a cereal box charlatan, but
yeah,
that's fine.
Hashtag math.
That wouldn't be enough to turn me off watching the show, but the second part of the problem is that actually I don't like anyone on the show.
This is
what I realized tonight, is that we're 4 episodes in and I'm not rooting for anyone. I don't feel like any of them are cool and I would want to be friends with them. Maybe it's because they haven't shown us anything about them.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot of people on the show and none of them seem appealing or interesting to me on a personal level. And I was thinking about how, like, Bachelor in Paradise, a lot of those characters in it were, like, already known to, like, they obviously were known to everyone else, but they were known, yeah, to me even as a non-Batch person. But they still had to kind of cut through, and yeah, they did really quickly. I was like, I love her and I love her and, yeah, I love him. And same with Maths. Like, Maths was a, yeah, fucking, like, shit show. But 4 episodes in, we definitely had people we were like fully going for. We were like, yeah, I love you, I love you. And I don't feel like that about anyone yet. So that's kind, yeah, of disappointing me, yeah, and annoying me.
That's, I hadn't really actually thought about it until you said it, which often happens, that you're right. I don't. There's no one who I'm thinking, she seems like a fucking legend.
Yeah. And,
you know, I really hope things work out for her.
That seem nice. There's plenty that seem like, oh, you seem perfectly agreeable and lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure if I worked with them or if I knew them, you know, I would, and or if they were my friend, I'd have a good time with them. I think the problem is that The Bachelor is the reverse of the Bechdel test. Like, we are literally not seeing these women talk about anything except that guy. And maybe that's one of the issues is that, yeah, I want to see, and I want to see friendships, and I don't want to see friendships in quote marks, which are like primary school bullying, like between Ariba and the other threesome girl and the one who gave the note, Juliet.
That's not a friendship though. That is a...
Yeah, that's my point. It's not a friendship.
That's a strategic alliance.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a friendship. That's why when there was like the highly off the cuff, not at all rehearsed scene where they like the made up. Yeah, yeah, oh, that yeah, was crap. No. But where they like where Juliet was like, yeah, I was thinking about what you said and I should have told you I was getting, and then Ariba was like, I forgive you. Anyway, bye. That was absurd. No, but
just kiss my foot.
Yeah, it was just
my hand, which was orcs, really orcs.
It was very Regina George.
It was. The thing is, out of everyone, at least Ariba is giving me a little bit of something, a little bit of entertainment.
1,000%. She's definitely like one of the most watchable.
Yeah. Can you imagine if she wasn't on the show? It would just be pretty women lying around crying about a tall guy.
To play devil's advocate, if she wasn't on the show.
I hate those words.
Yeah. Which obviously I tip my fedora before I say it. But if she wasn't on the show, someone else would be playing that role. Do you know what I mean? Either someone else that they cast, they wouldn't have gone ahead with the show unless they'd found their Ariba. And or maybe it would be Charlie doing it or whoever else. Do you know what I mean? Like there wouldn't be a show without that fulcrum around which to turn all the women. And I get that. I feel like Ariba, as far as that goes, is doing a good job. I feel like I realized tonight that the women are, you know, like Brit from Brit.
Brit
said they're being filmed all the time, but probably in the Bachelor Mansion less so than in Paradise. They're just being gathered together for these like fake scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the U Foods thing and the they're all sitting around in a square waiting for the date to come back and whatever. It's like we're probably not – they probably are talking about tons of stuff besides him, I would hope.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just not, you know, it's not part of the show. It's not part of the fantasy. The fantasy for people watching the show is not just that the Bachelor / Bachelorette will fall in love. It's that the people – who are the contestants will fight.
Yeah. And that's interesting. And that's what we talked about with Jody, Dr. Love, McAllister. And yet I'm feeling like if I saw genuine friendships between the women where, as you say, they must be sitting there talking about their lives and they don't have phones, they don't have anything else to do. So they must be, I don't know, chatting, I assume. Some people are doing makeup.
They're definitely not doing yoga.
No.
even though they all sat out on the yoga mats in their activewear to, you know, fulfill that scripted scene.
Bell and put it down.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Was it Abby saying that all there is to do is to bake and work out? That's the two things.
Yeah, like prison.
Yeah, someone said that. Yes, exactly, except you don't get to bake in prison.
Unless well, if you're on kitchen duty, if you're trusted with knives.
If you're Red from Orange is the New Black, wow, I haven't watched that in a long time. So if I saw some genuine friendships, that would actually raise the stakes a lot for me because then they are competing against people who they care about.
Well, funny you should say that. I did notice that Irina and Bella were cuddling.
Yeah, oh, I didn't
see
that. On
the couch, like at the cocktail party that was before the rose, my mind's just like blurring them all together. And they just looked like nothing more than just like two young women who've had too much to drink, who are lolling away about something and they're kind of
love
like
– you're they were so gorgeous.
Yeah. Yes. He's definitely going to pick you. No, he's going to pick you. And they were like kind of entwined and hugging and they'd kind of fallen over on the couch. And they just looked adorable in the way that, like, you know, in the way that you used to be able to witness on any Friday or Saturday night at any nightclub.
Yes.
So they just, not that we were there before.
No, the pandemic, and I didn't appreciate it at all. All I wanted to do any time that I was out anywhere was I was inside. I was thinking, I'd quite like to go home right now.
But they just.
And now I'm only at home.
They seem like they're real friends. That just made me think, do you know what I mean? Like they've bonded.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. I'll look out for that stuff more.
And they seem the most.
A natural pair, actually. Yes. They seem quite.
I was about to say, they seem the most compatible.
Yeah.
That said, it's interesting that the new woman, Caitlin, seems to have kind of buddied up with the Mean Girls group.
Oh, fuck. I think maybe I need
not,
to
not Mean Girls group, sorry, the Heathers. I'm mixing up my, like, Ariba, is it Christina? Ariba, Christina, Juliet, and Caitlin were then together in a little foursome. And I thought that was interesting that Caitlin's brand new and maybe, I don't know, for whatever reason, she's like, these are my gals.
Yeah. She really dropped off the radar to the bride. That's Caitlin, right? The bride.
Mm-hmm.
So they made this massive fanfare about her and Lockie professed his interest in
one of his
and
loves. Then we just, yeah.
And then we haven't seen her since then, which is interesting. So at the moment, who are you – No, let's get to that in a little bit.
Just to, like, recap who's been in the frame since we last recorded, Nicole with the cliff-jumping date.
And the cooking in the kitchen.
Yeah, which we should talk about, the cliff-climbing theme, because that was fucked.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there was Nicole, Caitlin with the single date, Roxy with a date tonight, and Bella with the
– Yeah.
Oh, no, we already talked about the boat, so Bella is way in the past now.
Yeah.
Who else? Yeah, maybe Nicole again. And Juliet got kind of pulled aside and given a rose. So that's kind of who's in the frame right now.
Yeah, and there are a lot of women there who we have seen absolutely nothing of.
And who we will see nothing of.
Never see again.
Until they're on Paradise.
Yeah, but really there are some we have not heard a word from. Any of except, you know, their introduction at the beginning, which is interesting because are they, narrative wise, are they suddenly going to pluck someone from obscurity in the chorus and bring them out into the date, or are the ones who we've been focused on so far the ones who are going to be?
That is the question. Mm. Are they keeping them off cam now because they end up getting eliminated quickly and they're unimportant?
Yeah.
Or are they keeping their powder dry to go like, bam, she came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
We shall see. Let's talk about the bloody making someone climb abseil a cliff on a date.
When they're scared of heights.
Dude.
It's like, go suck a dick, mate. Like,
when she said, I'm a bit scared of heights, the producers would just be, you're scared of heights, are you? Right. Get that abseiling company on the line.
In their application form, it would say biggest fear, foods that you cannot eat. Like it would literally, it would be part of like the selection process, how they could kind of exploit these, you know, vulnerabilities. But one I just felt like it modeled really bad, you know, like how it's like the lucky twist. I just thought this models the opposite of, you know, honesty, open communication, respecting other people's boundaries. Like, it's not cool. You know, it's not funny. And the whole time, and he's like, make a note that it was then while they were climbing up the frigging cliff face that I decided I don't like him.
Yeah.
That was the moment. I was like, you're a dickhead.
This is just whole thing. I'm just sick of this.
That makes sense. Before that, I was still thinking maybe he was okay because when they first got to the first abseiling bit and she was obviously terrified and he said to her, you don't have to do it, you know, just seeing you is enough and we can go.
Mm.
At that moment I thought, yeah, cool. So the producers have said, hey, you're going abseiling today, whether, you know, she's a bit nervous or something. And that seemed genuine, but then – they did it and she was obviously had this huge rush of relief. Oh, fuck, I've done it. And then he's like, oh, now we're going to
lol, fucking, you think you've done it.
Like, and that's when I, yeah, that's when I thought, oh, okay. So, because look, in that situation, if someone says you don't have to do it, of course she has to do it. It's if she doesn't do it, then she is, no, I'm talking about her emotional pressure on herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I don't, I'm the spoil sport. Yep. I'm not adventurous enough for this guy who lives in Bali, and I'm not going to get the rose at the end of this date, which she didn't anyway.
And he did. All of that. He did give her, like, there was instant reward for doing this thing, for pushing herself and doing this thing that was like against her instincts. It was like, you did so well and it was amazing. And he made some like that dirty comment about, yeah, I got the best view on the way up. Like I was right underneath. I was like, okay, gross. Thanks, Uncle Kevin or whatever. But then I also really disliked how the commentary from her was about how he, you know, he was just with me every step of the way. He was so supportive. He made me feel really calm about it. I'm like, so he helped you deal with a really difficult situation that you wouldn't have been in if not for him. This feels like in terms of like a metaphor for what that means in the real world. I'm aware that this is a TV show. That's gaslighting. That's like literally the red flag waving in your face that we want girls and young women to be on the lookout for. And instead this TV show is like, isn't this hilarious the way that, you know, she thought she couldn't do it and then she did it.
I suppose it would be different if she had said, hey, I'm really scared of heights. I would like to overcome that. And I could do that with some support from you. Let's go abseiling. Even when they said, hey, you're going abseiling, and she said, oh, I feel a bit freaked out, but actually I would really like to work on my fear of heights, so let's do this, instead of being like, oh, kind of dragged to the edge.
Yeah, or if he had been like, okay, we're going to go on a date, we can do this or this, you know, like we can, you know, like, and if she was then given any room to go like, oh, well, that actually scares the shit out of me. But maybe, yeah, I will do it. Like you said, you know, like given the option to have any agency in the situation. But instead she was like literally pushed to the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
Had a harness strapped to her. It's like, I don't love what this is saying. You know, that was my strong feeling. And also that it was like, surprise, you know, it feels very jockey and like macho and kind of douchey.
Yeah, and also there is that vibe, though, of he is this, I'm action man, I jump off cliffs, I go rock climbing, I ride bikes along that ravine, which I've still not been able to get out of my mind from the first episode.
It's right? Haunting you. It
really is. And therefore my partner must be into all of those things, and if you demonstrate that you're not, then you're clearly not the one for me. And the thing is that maybe that's true. Like maybe – If you don't actually super love doing all that stuff, then he's not the right partner for you. But they desperately want him to be the right partner for him. So they're like, I'm just going to contort myself into this person who's going to do something I really don't want to do.
Exactly. But it's not like it's not the only thing that's happened that smacks of like the cool girl bullshit as well. You know, like she's meant to be like she's an accomplished dancer. She's already got this fucking physical thing that she's really good at. You know what I mean? Like she doesn't need to prove herself to you in this thing that you have lots of experience in and she's never done. Like, but it also, the cool girl stuff is like, can she, you know, pull off a sexy cocktail gown and then scale a cliff face? Like she has to be able to do that and then knock back a brewski.
Can she eat burritos and still be thin?
Can she tackle other women on a football field playing a fake game that's been invented to showcase the fact that he played gridiron for Australia?
Oh, did he? I was wondering what the fuck the link there was and why he could do all the like, you know, Friday Night Lights stuff.
Because he's watched Friday Night Lights. Yeah, no, because he actually has played for Australia. In a sport that 14 people in Australia play. But it was the same thing like Roxy being like, yeah, I'll have a beer, you know, like, or Zoe Clare opening the beer bottle with their teeth. Like all of it is like designed to be this like, the, you know, template of the ideal woman.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter said all of that and has to be a cool girl. Also has to have own passions but be willing to set those aside to follow him to Bali, which is accurate.
Yeah.
And passionate, but not so passionate that you wouldn't change your life.
And look, to be with me. How, as I say this, I feel like waves of trauma washing over my body. But I'll do it anyway. Cool. How many strong feminist women have had the experience of a guy falling in love with them because they're so strong, they're so capable, they're so powerful, and then he comes to bitterly resent exactly all those things about you, yeah. And mm-hmm. spend your entire relationship trying to crush your spirit and take away all the, and reduce all of those qualities in you. And so it's like maybe it's just super triggering to watch it on the TV, but it's like this version of hetero patriarchal inverted commas romance. I guess I knew I was watching The Bachelor. I knew what I was getting into. I certainly understood it, I think, better than Roxy seems to. But
Roxy seems to be on the wrong show.
Yeah, like she's kind of shocked that he goes on other dates and stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm shocked at how you know, not even thinly veiled it is. I guess I'm shocked at how, like, extreme and obvious it is. You know, like the activity is like, oh, they're going to play a game of footy. So when all the women run out in football kit and Osha's like trying to stifle uncontrollable laughter.
Yeah.
And that kind of annoyed me because I was like, well, you guys are fucking humiliating them like this. But Lockie's kind of looking at them all like with this really patronizing look of like, oh, that's so cute. Like they think they can, they think they're people, you know, they think they can play football. And then, you know, to put them through this series of charades and then for him to be like so turned on by one of them being competent at it. Like it's just,
yeah.
I guess I'm shocked, and this is illustrating the extent of my naivety, but I guess I'm just shocked at how basic and like offensive it all is.
I found offensive the idea that anyone would ever be forced to wear white leggings in the rain on TV. National television. I can think of a few things I'd less rather do than run around in the rain in white leggings. However, you know, they all looked terrific.
And full faces of makeup and full artfully disheveled hair and nails. And, it was a bizarre display and something I noted when they were all wet and dirty and filthy and covered in mud and whatever was that it was a kind of – the smiles were really plastered on. Really, yeah. Like, I'm having such a good time. And they all just like really were like, I wish I was dead.
Yeah. I was also quite offended by, okay, so Charlie is a PE teacher. She has so far demonstrated that she doesn't know whether World War III has happened or not. And... and also the amazing quote unquote tackle that she did was actually more like someone in baseball sliding into the
face. It was a foul. She tripped her 100% over.
100% illegal. Yeah. There's no way. I don't know much about gridiron beyond Friday Night Lights, but I'm pretty sure you can't just kneecap someone.
That's what I mean. Like, I didn't notice that. I didn't connect together that she doesn't have a basic grasp of modern history and she's a teacher, but that's a really good point. Yeah. But I did think to myself when she, inverted commas, tackled Roxy that literally you'd be sent off the field in any other situation for sticking your leg out and tripping someone over. And she's lucky that Roxy didn't break her leg.
Yeah.
But like, she, you know, all's fair in love and gridiron.
Love and gridiron, ha ha, wink, I'll kill you in your sleep, says Roxy. Look, I'm piling on Charlie. I would have done absolutely nowhere near as well as she did. However, I probably wouldn't call myself the MVP, the most valued player. Isn't it the most valuable player?
It
I mean,
is.
I am not a sports ball person.
MVP is usually the most valuable. But obviously they weren't going to give out a best and fairest because nobody was playing fairly. I think it's maybe Ariba and the others were just sort of like running around, just sort of flailing around, kind of looking distressed. It was a very strange choice, the whole thing.
I think it was just a comedy edit to get them in the cute out, like cute quote unquote outfits, you know, with the tights and like those big shoulder pads. It's cute when girls wear that.
Is it or is it porny?
Well, it's a costume, I suppose.
I feel like the trope of the hot girl in the guy's football jersey is porny.
Yeah.
But also dehumanizing and objectifying because it's like, oh, hilarious, women playing football, you know, when real women who play real football aren't like 45 kilograms of nothing and
no
fake nails and lashes and whatever, you know, not talking about the aesthetics, but not talking about the costume choices or whatever, but like they play to win. They play
the practicality of it. It's a
sport. The hair is like pulled back. The mouth guard is in. The fucking fake nails are saved for another time. Like, so it's kind of, it made me think of that like lingerie football thing where it was like, you know, women are allowed to do this man stuff as long as it is cute and as long as we can sexually objectify you.
And as long as it's ridiculous.
Yes. As long as we can utterly humiliate you.
Yeah. Yes. I know a couple of women who play gridiron and they're not there to be laughed at. They're serious.
They're not there to fuck spiders.
Amazing athletes. Yeah, no. Thanks, Queensland.
They're not there to pick up either.
No. Well, maybe each other.
Just some more cliches of women in sport.
Yeah, well, is it a cliche if it's true?
Yes, it's a cliche for a reason. I agree. The other cliche is the PE teacher being a bit of a ding-dong. Like,
yes. You know,
like she's a jock.
Yeah, she is. I have fondness for her, even though I've slammed her.
No, I get enjoyment out of her. I feel like, you know, I want to hear more from Steph. I did really like Steph. I feel like she's my MVP.
We didn't see her at all
so far. Yeah.
Okay. So before we were saying there's no one who we root for or connect with, Steph is probably
Steph
that
is really. That's what I mean by tonight. I was like, no one in this episode.
Right.
Like, I don't care if any of you leave. I don't care if any of you talk to him. I don't care about you. And I realize it's because Rosemary seems to have kind of turned into a blubbering mess. And Steph has been kind of sidelined for now. So our kind of initial sparks have dimmed a little bit. But
maybe they can get them back on screen.
Yeah, and but the big one is that he now just annoys me.
Yeah.
I feel like the way that he talks, that's why I keep coming back to these like home improvement shows. The way that he talks is that kind of, you know, balance of like friendliness with like, you know, non-threatening masculinity. It's a kind of, it's a particular vein or strain of Australian masculinity that's like, I'm lovable, I'm here to help,
I'm manly, but I'm friendly at the same time.
And it's also like, I'm a red-blooded male, you know, like three girls, oh, I don't know where to look, oh, you know, kind of like that made me just go, oh, God.
Yeah. He mentioned when he was reassuring Nicole. Sorry, my voice.
That was so cute.
Shut up. You should hear me sneeze. Lockie would find it adorable.
Like your tiny hands.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he probably would. God. Anyway. When he was reassuring Nicole when she was worried and he said something like, my adventure guide side came out, And I think that's that persona, which is I'm friendly and engaging, but I'm a little bit separate.
Okay.
I'm friends with you, but we're not necessarily friends.
I'm friendly and engaging, but I'm also reliable and I'll stop you from dying. You're right. It is adorable.
Oh, I was trying to make that one manly. Usually it's more like
Yeah. Well, speaking of like daintiness, it also hit me tonight that they're all so tiny and he's so giant that when they're together, like they seem literally half his size. And that kind of freaked me out. Like it made me it gave me lots of like horrible feelings about not being tiny, which was like my shit.
Yeah.
But it also made me think of like, oh, he is so enormous that any of these women are just like this little doll.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just gave me weird feelings in my tummy. It just made me feel like, and that's also a kind of cartoonish exaggeration of the platonic ideal that's valorized within heteropatriarchal romance as well, that like he's fucking enormous and he's like kind of square jawed and square shouldered and she's just this little slip of a thing, because it drives home to me that the pressure on men to be giant and build themselves up, and it drives home to me the pressure on women to vanish themselves, to like diminish themselves and make themselves as barely there as possible. Like he's twice as big as Osha.
Yeah, and twice as big as... Yeah, no, you're right.
But you know what I mean? Like he's however, like...
I'm nitpicking, yeah.
Head and shoulders, huge. Nipple to back, whatever, you know. Yeah.
Double the nipple to
back. Double the nipple to back. So it's just like, oh, my God, he's just... They're both all these extremes, and yet it's on TV because that's the ideal. That's like what everyone should be striving for. And so it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Mm, yeah.
That was a very long-winded attempt to explain that. That I don't like it. Oh, are we going to talk about the letter? Oh, can we just not?
Dear Lockie, you have a huge majestic presence and a beautiful captivating energy that causes me to shake.
The one thing I did want to confess was that when Lockie said to Steph something like he called her daddy and it was kind of hot.
He said daddy and then she said, call me daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cute. Yeah, that was very cute.
Wow, dad stealing the show once again.
And it's like when he is expressing his physical attraction to Roxy, that's hot too. Mm. Like he's like, she's sexy. Yeah. Like, you know, she gets me going, you know. That's sexy. Yeah. And this is the thing, is that the women seem to like be able to keep their shit together when they're around him in order to present a veneer of normality. And then they go away and just drop their fucking bundle.
Yeah, they fall apart. It's like when when little kids go to childcare or school and they hold it together all day, and then they get home and they lose their absolute shit the moment they're with their people. They're just like...
Yeah, but this is kind of the opposite, because then when the women are around all of these like threats, you know, they go to water and it's like, bloody compose yourself, woman. Like,
it's more just like there's only a certain amount of time that you can hold yourself so rigidly.
Mm.
So when you've got someone like Roxy, who, like, bless her, she seems like great, but she came in and hot with yeah, I've got mad trust issues. To Lockie, like one of the first things she said in their conversation. That's
Nicole,
that's real
said
trauma
that too. Nicole said on their group date, I have real issues with trusting men.
Yeah, fair.
And I was like, yeah, no shit. Why don't you go on a show where the guy that you are pursuing just also dates like 20 other people at the same time just tells you lies constantly. That's a great idea.
Healthy. It's exposure therapy.
The other little like horrible little moment that I felt deep in my soul as a mother was as a mom, as a busy working mom.
When
Nicole was being quizzed about whether she would live in Bali, and then she did that bit to camera and she's like, yeah, I can really see myself living in Bali, like, you know, like furthering my dance career and just like having some kids and then just like travel. And I just thought, oh, honey, oh.
Yeah, two of those things are not like the other.
Oh, do you think, oh, that's so cute how you just like sandwiched it in the middle there as though they were all possible simultaneously. Yeah. Like it just made me think, oh, yeah, that's right, you're 25. And when you're 25, you think, oh, yeah, one day I'll definitely be able to have kids at the same time as a fulfilling life, relationship, travel plans, a career. Yeah, I'll definitely be able to do all those things because, like, obviously all these other people always have, right? And then it's like you become a mother and all the other mothers go, psych, no one has that. Yeah. And most of us lose our relationships and we never travel again and take massive hits to our career and our bodies never recover. Welcome. Dive in. The water is warm.
Yeah.
That may be too much information for Nicole at this point in her life, but if any of our listeners can take that on board, you're welcome.
Take one aboard and don't take one.
Take that on board and don't take one on board your body.
Thanks, Auntie.
I mean, unless that's all you want to do.
Yeah, look, I'm feeling guilty because, you know, I've traveled and everything since having a kid, but it's not the same. It's different and in many ways shitter.
And that's the thing. It's very hard to explain to people that it's like the best and most magical and beautiful thing that has ever happened to you and also extremely shit.
Also a major drag.
Also pretty much the worst. Yeah.
I mean, I just lol forever bitterly when I think about how I used to think that going on a long flight with myself to manage and nothing else was like a tiring, stressful, or just like a drag.
Yeah, was in any way difficult.
Like sitting for 10 hours while someone brings you food and you watch shows on a tablet and then you go to the toilet and then you come back and have a snooze if you want to put your mask on. Like that's a fucking holiday in itself, right? But then, and then since having a kid, I'm like, yeah. You could travel to Mars and back and it'd be more relaxing than a three-hour flight with a baby or a
toddler. Definitely get more sleep.
Anyway, hashtag mum life.
Oh, dear. We laugh.
Exactly. Love you, kids.
This is now a mummy podcast, a mum cast. Oh, no, you know that, you know, we can't help but mum occasionally.
Yeah, occasionally every moment of our lives.
That's how it goes.
On that, Karen, I'm going to finish by mentioning how much I loved your song that you recorded and released into the world about this run of episodes. And I'm going to hope, I know that our beloved listeners are going to enjoy it. So here is a little bit of it.
That fucking bitch is a snake, big time. That fucking bitch is a snake, big time. That fucking bitch is a snake, big time. That fucking bitch is a snake, big time.
You can ask us to marry you on nearly_beloved on Twitter, nearlybelovedpodcast on Insta, and nearlybelovedpodcast@gmail.com.
God, I think we made an amazing impression and I'm feeling quite confident.
I now pronounce this podcast finished.